You have deep, burning questions. Does God exist? Is there heaven or hell? Why do we suffer? Do you feel a yearning to know there is something more? Author Mary Dioma had a transcendent experience, and she tackles all this and more in her book, Loved, A Transcendent Journey. Available in print and for download on Amazon.com. And if you buy the print version, the download is only 99 cents. For more information, go to LovedATranscendentJourney.com.
Today we have a special guest, Janice Holden, who has a wide knowledge about near-death experiences. Now, she has been involved with the Handbook of Near-Death Experiences, which I believe they investigated or researched over 3,000 near-death experiences. She has a lot of understandings that even I didn't know, and I've interviewed about 100 folks, but imagine the knowledge that she's gained through interviewing or being involved with that project. Janice, are you on board?
Rudy.
Yes. Hello, Janice, you're on board?
Hi, Rudy. Can you hear me?
I certainly can.
Good.
I'm so glad you're on our guest tonight. Now, I have been looking at your credentials, and it looks to me like you spent a lot of time researching near-death experiences. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
I sure can. Well, back in the mid-1980s, I was finishing up my doctoral degree in counselor education. And I had to do a dissertation, and for that dissertation, I actually started 5 different projects, one at a time, and each time I would start a project, it would abort sooner or later. And finally, in the 5th idea, I did something related to near-death experiences, which I'd been interested in since I had read Moody's book. It had been published in 1975. I read it in 1978. And so now I look back and think that the universe was kind of waiting for me to finally get the right dissertation study for it to support me to the end of the degree. So I did the study and finished it and got my degree, and I have been just fascinated by NDEs ever since. So I've been researching them for, about almost 30 years now.
Almost 30 years of researching. And for me, I would say that I've not been researching them, but I've been perplexed about them, as I was a near-death experiencer myself for the last 30 years. Now, Janice, just as a sound cue, do you have a radio on or listening to the show in the background? You need to mute that because I think we're hearing some feedback. I'm not sure, but it's not coming from me because I had my radio on mute.
I don't have the radio on. I don't have the show on. My husband is listening to the World Cup, but that's it.
Okay. Well, we'll have to fight through this. We may, when we go to a station identification break, would you do me a big favor and just call back in so maybe we can get rid of that reverberation. Anyway, I can still hear you, but we're just getting a little bit of reverberation. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm hearing
some funny noises, too.
Okay. Well, I hate to have that, but we'll go to a station identification break in 3 minutes, Dr. Richardson.
Okay.
Is that okay?
And you bet.
Anyway, Janice, I'm so glad you're coming on board. You're going to be having a conference or something like that in Austin, and I am from Austin, or at least I've spent about 20 years of my life in Austin. It's just a wonderful town. At the Austin Center for Spiritual Living. And so that's tomorrow, June 17th, 2014. And I'd like for you to just talk a little bit about that, and we'll go to a station identification break.
Okay. Well, tomorrow I'm going to be presenting what I call my NDE 101 presentation. And it actually is a summary of the Handbook of Near-Death Experiences, with the points illustrated by excerpts of an on-camera interview that I did with a gal who had her near-death experience in Austin in the 1990s. And normally when I do this lecture, I'm not in Austin. I live up in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. This is, I think, and as many times as I've done this lecture, I think it's going to be the first time that I'm going to be bringing Tricia home, so to speak, to tell her story to native Austinians. So the Handbook of Near-Death Experiences, a summary of 30 years of research on NDEs, beginning with Raymond Moody's book in 1975 and summarizing all the research studies that have been published on near-death experiences since then. So we cover the contents of the experience itself, the after effects, and then special topics like distressing near-death experiences, children's near-death experiences, cross-cultural near-death experiences, veridical perception, which is a special interest of mine, which is where the person, after their NDE, they report that during the NDE, they were perceiving things that they shouldn't have been able to perceive based on the condition and position of their physical body, but what they perceived is later verified as being accurate. And so there's a chapter on that, and then a chapter on how healthcare professionals and others can apply what research has shown about NDEs in the care of people who've had them.
Okay, well, Janice, I think we're going to go ahead and go to a station identification break.
Okay.
This is the CRS radio, NDE show, and I'll just keep on talking until our
You have deep, burning questions. Does God exist? Is there heaven or hell? Why do we suffer? Do you feel a yearning to know there is something more? Author Mary Dioma had a transcendent experience, and she tackles all this and more in her book, Loved, A Transcendent Journey. Available in print and for download on Amazon.com. And if you buy the print version, the download is only 99 cents. For more information, go to LoveTheTranscendentJourney.com.
This is Rudy Radinsky with the Caribbean Radio Show. You can find us on CRSRadio.com. And we do this NDE show every Monday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Central Standard Time. And if you're out there in the Caribbean, you know how to do the math. And if you are in Austin, Texas, or somewhere within driving distance, tomorrow on June 17th, 2014, then go to the Austin Center for Spiritual Living. And Janice Holden, who has an amazing amount of knowledge, 30 years of experience researching near-death experiences, he will be talking to that group there. And we'll get the address here just shortly. Janice, did you call back in yet?
Yeah, actually, y'all called me back.
Oh, okay, good. Well,
yep.
It seems slightly better. I can still hear something going on in the background. I can't figure it, but it does seem a little bit better. Maybe we can hang on and talk slowly. Sometimes if we talk slowly, the sound doesn't reverberate quite as bad. Now,
okay.
I've heard about the Handbook of Near-Death Experiences for about 4 or 5 years, but or something like that. I've never read it. And I'll tell you, I have, as anybody who gets close to me knows, I have some vision problems, and I don't do a very good job with reading print. But that's one of the reasons why I really enjoy interviewing people, because I can sit there and talk to them about their experience rather than having to read about them. However, it does sound intriguing. Could you tell the audience about the Handbook of Near-Death Experiences and how they could get a hold of one, and tell them how you're affiliated with that book?
Okay. Well, back in 2006, I was president of the International Association for Near-Death Studies. And every year, the association puts on a conference, and we discovered that we kind of looked at each other one day and said, 2005 was the 30th anniversary of Raymond Moody's book, Life After Life, that brought awareness of near-death experiences to professionals and the public. And so we thought this would be a good time to bring together the leading researchers from across the world and bring them to our conference site, which that year was at MD Anderson Cancer Center and in Texas. And we had 2 days where the presenters presented on specific topics, and for each topic, they did a comprehensive critical review of all research on that topic. So we started with the contents of pleasurable adult Western near-death experiences, which is the kind that have been researched the most, and then after effects of those experiences. And then another speaker did distressing near-death experiences. Another did children's near-death experiences. And so when you put all these topics together, it's really a comprehensive critical review of all research on near-death experiences that's ever been done. And by that time, there had been studies from countries, all the Western countries and some Oriental countries, and studying over 3,500 near-death experiencers altogether when you put all the research studies together. So it was a really good amount of studies to be able to draw some conclusions about what research has shown about NDEs. So after the conference, each of the presenters wrote the chapter for the handbook, and I was the lead editor. Bruce Grayson from the University of Virginia, who I really consider to be the greatest researcher of NDEs, and he was second editor, and then Debbie James, a nurse who at that time from MD Anderson, was third editor. So we put all these chapters together, and that's the book.
Well, that sounds really interesting. I think that a lot of folks that are looking into NDEs, they will see a lot of Western NDEs, I mean, and the positive ones. And most don't hear too much about the negative experiences. And a lot of it, I believe, is because people who have negative NDEs, they don't talk about it as often, or they feel uncomfortable talking about it. And then children's NDEs are very interesting. But there's something you said earlier, and I wanted to talk about that as well, is when we can actually prove that we saw something in our NDE that was impossible for us to see. And so I think that's a way to proving the NDE. For example, I'm just going to give the most obvious example is the blind person from birth who's never seen light, color, anything, who has a near-death experience, and then wherever he goes, sees and perceives through his vision. And that's just, to me, the biggest proof of all that NDEs are correct, and it's not just something that's made up in the brain. Because how could you know what you don't, what you've never known? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's one of the strongest bits of evidence. And then there are the cases where people saw things that these are people who are sighted, but based on the condition and position of their body, they should not have been able to perceive things that they did, and then is later shown to be accurate. So for the Handbook of Near-Death Experiences, I did a little study of my own. I found every anecdote that was reported either prior to 1975 or since 1975 as part of a research study. And I found over 100 anecdotes, and I analyzed them for whether there were any inaccuracies in what the person reported, and also whether, you know, there's, it's one thing if a person says, I saw something, and I later checked it out, and it was correct, and it's another thing if somebody else checked it out and reported it like a researcher. And so, so for example, there's a near-death experiencer named Al who was having heart surgery. His heart went into cardiac arrest, during which he had a near-death experience. And when, of course, he was resuscitated, and when he regained consciousness after the surgery was over, he reported that during the near-death experience, he was out of his body watching from above, which is, you know, typical for near-death experiencers. And he saw his physician flapping his arms as if trying to fly. And when he told the nurse this, the nurse thought, that's odd. And so eventually, someone researched the story and went to each of the people that had been in the operating room at the time and said, you know, the patient said that you know, during the time he was flatlined, he was out of his body, and he saw his doctor flapping his arms as if trying to fly. And one by one, each of the people would pause and then say, Oh, yeah, and then they would explain it. Well, finally, he went to the physician himself and said, you know, the patient says that he saw you doing this. And the doctor said, well, yeah, he said, so here's what happens. Whenever I scrub in and my hands are sterile, I put them on my chest, and then I back into the operating room, and I stand on the sidelines while they're doing all the preliminary things, you know, including opening the person up and everything. And finally, when the heart is exposed and it's time for me to step in, I step in and I take my hands away from my chest and start doing, you know, the surgery. He said, well, in this case, while I was standing there with my hands on my chest, the patient went into cardiac arrest. So I was pointing with my elbows. I was saying, you know, get the scalpel and move that tray and do this and do that. And he was, like, moving his, pointing with his elbows. Well, he looked to the patient like he was flapping his arms as if trying to fly. And actually, he was just pointing with his elbows. And so... And it's something where, you know, during surgery, the patient was obviously not only deeply anesthetized, but he was in cardiac arrest. The head is covered up, the eyes are taped shut, and somebody flapping their arms, so to speak, or pointing with their elbows is not making enough noise that anybody could hear that. And so how could the patient have known this very idiosyncratic thing that this doctor did, but everybody, he'd been at this hospital for years, and everybody just knew he did that and didn't even think twice about it. But the patient saw it and was correct. So those kinds of cases indicate that when people say that their consciousness was outside of their body, that it really was.
Well, Janice Holden, the former president of the International Association of Near-Death Studies, the editor of the Handbook of Near-Death Experiences, is on our show tonight. And Janice, I just wanted to say that whenever you started talking about that, I had a near-death experience when I was 20 or 21 years old, right around that time. I guess I was 20 years old. And I recall... when I was coming back to my body, I saw a lady pull up in a sports car, get out, she had a very elegant dress on and high-heeled shoes, and she got out of her car. And then I saw a man pull up in a pickup truck, and it was raining extremely hard, and he pulls up and starts talking to her, and it was just a little blue. And then I saw my body, and I went back into my body. And, I mean, I don't know... It's recorded somewhere. I'm sure it is in the police report. But I bet if you could prove that there was a lady that pulled up and assisted me, and there was a man that pulled up in a pickup truck and sped off, I assume went to call for the ambulance service, which was there within 5 minutes. To me, I think that is proof, because I was in a cornfield with a broken neck, and unconscious or even dead. I believe I was dead. And But then I went back into my body and I came back to life. Now, would that be considered one of those if let's say that a police report could say that those things happened when it was impossible for me to see that because I was in a cornfield in a little MTV that could if something that could prove it, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah, that could very well be a case of veridical perception if you could find the evidence that that is what happened. Yep.
Wow. I wonder if those police reports go back that far. I mean, I would just be interested to know. I mean, because I believe, to me, it was defining that there's no way that, I mean, she did show up out in the cornfield. I mean, so, but I certainly didn't notice the dress, or I didn't notice any high-heeled shoes. All I saw was somebody leaning over me saying, "Are you okay?"
Uh-huh.
And then I was in shock, and I looked up at her and I said, "Oh, I'm fine. I just need to get to a hospital." I said, uh-huh. I said, could you follow me? My car was still running. And she said, she says, I think you probably just should lay down. as I had a broken neck and there was blood everywhere. But I was sitting there thinking it was okay. And I was kind of afraid the police were going to get me for running off the road, give me a ticket. And I guess I thought I was fine. But then I laid down and went into shock and was shaking all over the place, freezing cold. And then ambulance was there within just a few minutes out on that rural highway where volunteer ambulance came out to rescue me. But, you know, I look on that and I say that was absolute proof that for my case anyway, because there's no way I could have seen it.
Yeah. Mhm. Yeah, I think that's a really good possibility. It would be very interesting to go back and see if the police report indicates anything like that.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it was a pickup truck, the little sports car, the lady, the guy. I mean, they've got to show up somewhere. But anyway, what are some other examples? I mean, has anybody ever seen the number on a light bulb or a tennis shoe outside of a window or something like that? I haven't interviewed anybody who actually, you know, had something that noticeable. But I mean, is there other examples that you have?
Well, yeah, there are other examples. In fact, one of them is the gal that I'll be using excerpts from my on-camera interview with her when I speak tomorrow night. Part of her experience involved veridical perception. She was in surgery when her heart stopped, and she was outside of her body. A lot more things happened than what I'm going to tell you about, but I'm just going to take the part that involved veridical perception. Eventually, she left the operating room and went through the hospital, and as happens in near-death experiences, she thought about her stepfather, and zoom, she was right where he was on the other side of the hospital, and she saw him putting quarters into a vending machine and vending out a candy bar. And she thought that was really odd because he and her mother were both really health food nuts, and they didn't eat refined sugar. She'd never seen them eat refined sugar, and here he was vending out a candy bar. Well, apparently it must have been comfort food from the stress of her. She had been in a terrible car accident and a lot of potential tragedy. So anyway, she went on and had other aspects of her NDE and then was resuscitated. And when she regained consciousness, only her mother was there. And she had the presence of mind to tell her mother, you know, during my surgery, I was out of my body and I saw you and I saw Dad. And she said, but where was my stepfather? And her mother said, well, he felt like a fifth wheel because even though your father and I are divorced, you are our child, and we were kind of joined in concern for you. So your stepdad went and took a long walk through the hospital, and he came back, you know, almost an hour later, and she said, oh, and Tricia, you'll never believe this. When he came back, he was eating a candy bar. And Tricia said, I believe it because I saw it. So there
you go. You know, that's really interesting. We had an anesthesiologist on our show recently, Dr. Pardee, and he left his body and went to India. And he actually went into his mother's kitchen and saw his mother and another family member preparing dinner. And so whenever he asked them, well, where were you at this time? Well, I was in the kitchen preparing dinner, and I believe he saw a clock or something like that. However, I believe that these kinds of things are proving that we are something outside of our physical bodies. But some people would say that is just the brain creating some kind of electrical field, okay? And that electrical is not really a soul at all. However, it just, whenever you die, it returns back to energy. But while it's on its way out, it may do some, you know, crazy things, maybe not so crazy, but some things that maybe are imprinted in our DNA. Now, what do you say to those folks who, I guess they would say that that it really isn't a spirit or a soul, and it doesn't really go anywhere, but it's just doing something like a blueprint relieving people's thoughts who are dying. What do you think?
Well, I really don't know. I mean, that answer just doesn't make sense to me. Right now, and according to Western scientific thinking, there are two ways that we gain knowledge. One is directly through our senses, and the other is through the process of reasoning. And so if someone is perceiving something that is remote from their physical body, they can't be perceiving with their physical senses. And if they're perceiving things, especially things that defy their expectations, then they're not using reason. And one of the things that I did in my analysis of these over 100 cases of veridical perception is analyzed, I looked for any error whatsoever in what the person reported. And only a small percentage of the cases involved even a minor error. And only one case involved a major error. And so how can people be accurately perceiving without the use of the physical senses or the use of deductive reasoning? It just doesn't fit our scientific view of how things work. So
well,
what
Mm-hmm. Well, Janice, what you're saying now, Dr. Partee, he also saw what he called an archangel, in his NDE, and he was not a Christian. So he said, well, that's just, why did Hindu gods in your NDE? You know, and so he was seeing something that he didn't even believe in.
Uh-huh.
And so I think what you're saying is if you see something and it doesn't match what you believed before you had the NDE, then it can, in a sense, it can prove that you had some kind of experience beyond your own brain. Now,
right.
For example, there's another example that many people who are of certain religions or certain belief systems believe that animals, when they die, that's it. They just die. And the only souls or spirits or energy or whatever you want to call it that goes on to the light is the human soul. And so I've just interviewed so many people now who've seen animals that it just defies that thinking, and yet there are some people who said, well, they believe that there were no animals, but yet when they arrived, they saw their pets, or they saw a horse, or they saw a lion, or they saw a bird, or even in one case that we interviewed last week, they actually saw something that looked very much like a dragon flying through the air, or dragons. And I think it's just interesting that those NDEs, in my opinion, because they defy what that person firmly believed before, would that be a kind of a proof, or would that just be as far as the strength of evidence, where would that land?
Well, I think it is suggestive, but I think that the kinds of things that have the potential to be convincing are things that can be verified afterwards. So, for example, if we've talked about a few kinds of cases. Another kind is where a person has a near-death experience. In the experience, they meet a deceased loved one, and when they regain consciousness, they tell people, you know, I saw so-and-so, except that according to anything that anybody knows, so-and-so is still alive. And then an hour later, they get notification, someone calls and says, so-and-so died 3 hours ago. So the person actually was dead at the time that the near-death experiencer had their experience and saw this person deceased. So it's another kind of case that, you know, can be verified. But certainly, any time that people have experiences that contradict their expectations, it supports the idea that at least near-death experiences are not just the imaginings of people who see what they expect to see. So there's some evidence there, but not as much as if they see something that is not known at the time but is later verified to be accurate, or see something that was physically impossible for them to have seen and is later verified as accurate. Does that make sense?
Well, for example, one of the folks that we've interviewed, they actually saw a person in their NDE whose shoes were untied.
Uh-huh.
And then when they went back and talked to their relative, they said, well, he never tied his shoes. He always left his shoes untied. And so that's just like one of those things. That, how could you know that? Even
right.
If it has nothing to do with cultural belief, it has nothing to do with an expectation. It has to be a memory of somebody
exactly.
Know
yep.
Was
mm-hmm.
real.
Yeah.
That's real.
That's another example of what ends up being veridical perception. If the near-death experiencer had not really known this person but had seen them in the NDE, then it's very, very convincing. And so what these cases suggest is that, you know, in Western scientific thinking, the brain produces consciousness. And then when the brain dies, consciousness dies. Well, there's another possibility, and that is that consciousness actually exists independent of the brain. It's closely associated with the brain during physical life, but when physical life ends, consciousness disconnects, so to speak, and continues. And that's what veridical perception seems to support, is the latter view rather than the former view.
Well, and we call that the soul or spirit or energy or something.
Mm-hmm.
That
right.
you call it consciousness. And
right.
There are so many people who have had these NDEs at this point. I mean, I blame it on emergency rooms, you know, emergency room doctors who actually save, you know, hundreds of thousands of people every year. They actually die and they just bring them back to life. Or even the first responders who go out there and save people's lives. In my case, it was a first responder that kept me alive so I could actually tell the tale.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. Well, that's how we start the handbook of near-death experiences, talking about the field of near-death studies and how during the 20th century, resuscitation technology advanced to the point that suddenly we were bringing people back from the brink of death in numbers unprecedented in human history. And because of that, we were able to hear, instead of, you know, a story every 100 years, we were having, you know, hundreds of stories every year. And when we could put all those stories together, we could start to see the patterns in near-death experiences, both in the experiences themselves and the after effects, and then collect these cases of veridical perception. So you're absolutely right. I agree that it's resuscitation technology that's primarily responsible for this.
Well, in my case, they stabilized my neck and put the, you know, the neck brace on me and kept me kept me moving. They immobilized me, and I'm bleeding to death. So I assume they were giving me IV fluids and you know, blood and you know, I don't know what else. I mean, also morphine. I'm assuming I was probably very close to death, even several times on the way to the actual emergency room. So you have a combination of resuscitation and just and first responders that are able to bring people from what could have been absolutely death. I mean, my neck was broken. So,
yeah.
You know, there's way that we can build up a lot of credibility. And yet, if this would have happened to, like someone, let's say, pre, 21st century, you know, like, let's go back to the 1800s. And, you know, when people break their neck, they just die.
Yeah, right.
So when someone has a heart attack, they just die. And those are the kinds of things that happen. So now, but then, you would almost be considered a mystic, or if you were to survive something like that. I mean, the Native American cultures, they actually had processes where they would bring their young men to the point of death and then bring them back. I mean, that created sometimes a Indian-like state amongst some of their shaman, I guess is what they would call them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you can understand why, because some of the after effects of near-death experiences include enhanced telepathy and precognition and just sensitivity and awareness that would help in survival and in making informed decisions and just making the person wiser. So so it's understandable why earlier cultures valued people who'd had experiences like this.
Well, you know, for me, as a personal experiencer, I could be loosely defined as a socially created psychopath. I dwelt on killing people all day long as a soldier. I mean, that's all I did all day long. And after work, I would still role play killing people through war games and through video games. I mean, it was just like that was me. My whole day and my whole evening was consumed by killing. And followed by ND, I just didn't want to kill anyone because I thought, well, this person that I'm going to be killing is, well, they're made out of the same substance I'm made out of. Their soul is made out of, and for me to kill them, it would be like killing myself. And so I don't know if that's or not. If you're a soldier, that makes you a pretty lousy soldier.
that's true. Yeah, that's the downside for if a culture requires people to be warriors, it probably would be problematic for them to have near-death experiences and then not be willing to wage war. Yeah.
Well, but there, and I want to say this, and I bring it up on almost every single show, but as a former soldier and a veteran, and my handiwork, I'm not real proud of it, but I helped with building, with creating wars, and also some of the things that are going on even to this day. I mean, I see it on television. I go, wow, we did that. We made that happen 30 years ago. And but now we're getting the after effects of battlefield medics that will save people that have had horrendous injuries. I mean, just completely horrific from these roadside bombs. And they will piece them back together because they do not want another soldier to go back in a coffin. They may come back with missing eyes and ears and a face, or they may have a missing limb, you know, or two or three or four, but they're not going to die. But they did die, okay? And then, but they, and then there are others that are coming back with horrible PTSD. Soldiers are killing themselves all the time because they're having a hard time dealing with what their, I believe, their near-death experiences. And then the rules are you have to kill people. They're juxtaposed between somebody telling them they've got to kill people and their PTSD is what they're calling it, but I don't think it's that at all. I just think it's growing a conscious. You know, they just feel like they cannot kill anymore, and so they go AWOL, and then their family members, their peers, they tell them that they're a person, and yet they have the solution. The solution is to put a bullet in their head or to overdose on drugs or narcotics. So I don't believe that the NDE by itself, without a support system in place, is always helpful. And so I don't think always that the NDE doesn't always lead to something wonderful and awesome happening for them. In fact, for these soldiers, I believe it's creating havoc in their mind when they come back.
Mm-hmm. Well, that could very well be. And combat near-death experiences are one topic that we need to have a lot more research on. My doctoral student, Tracy Goza, did her dissertation on combat NDEs, but, you know, the students don't have forever to gather data, so she had to stop after getting a relatively low number. And so it was just a preliminary study, but we really need to do a lot more to find out about the kinds of things that you're talking about.
Well, IAMS, International Association of Near-Death Studies and ASSIST, they can hook up soldiers who have PTSD or what's designated as PTSD and help them through this if they've had a spiritually transformative experience or a near-death experience from combat. Now, if you are a soldier who has PTSD or has been diagnosed having PTSD and you're thinking, well, I don't have a problem, not that I have a problem, I just don't want to do what they're telling me to now, and so they're calling me defiant and they're saying I'm aggressive, but in reality I'm doing what they're telling me to because I don't feel like I can do that anymore. And they're not cowards, but they are having problems. You can contact the International Association of Near-Death Studies at IAMS.com, and also you can also contact the International Association of Near-Death Studies, and those two places, and that's IANDS, IANDS. Just look it up. Google it if you're a soldier out there listening to the archive or listening to us on Facebook, Twitter, or live. And another thing you can do is go to your presentation tomorrow in Austin, and that's going to be April 14th at the Austin. Let me see if I can find it here. Can you tell us what the address and the location that you're going to have your talk tomorrow?
I don't have it right in front of me, but it's June 17th, right? Tuesday, June 17th at 7 p.m. at the Center for Spiritual Living in Austin. So if someone can do just a search on their internet, they can probably find the address, or if we have a break, I can go get it during the break and then read it to you later. And you also had mentioned ASSIST, the American Center for the Integration of Spiritually Transformative Experiences, and that's ACISTE, at assist.com. That organization is dedicated to helping mental health professionals become competent to work with people who've had spiritually transformative experiences, like that includes near-death experiences. And they're developing a roster of mental health professionals across the U.S. who are particularly prepared to address these kinds of concerns. So that's another source for not only veterans, but anyone who would like, they don't even really have to be struggling in the aftermath, but just feel like it might be helpful to them to work with a mental health professional who's knowledgeable about these kinds of experiences and can help with the after effects, can help to facilitate deeper integration of the experience, those kinds of things.
Well, for me, please. Well, do we have a caller?
Well, I do believe it could be Jessica Haynes.
Jessica, how are you doing? I'm so
glad. Is this Rudy?
To hear you. Yes. We have.
Well, yes, I have been listening to the conversation.
Oh, well, what do you think? Do you have questions or do you have any comments?
I have comments, and also, yes, I've been listening for the, well, virtually from the beginning. Well, it's very interesting of all these wonderful things that this wonderful lady is saying, Ginny, Janice Haldren, correct?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And Janice Haldren. And, yes, I would like to, with Rudy, I've known him for quite some time, and he's a very good interviewer. You are very good at putting together point one, point two, point three, point four, point five in research, in all different types of research. I'm very impressed with that. Could we go back to, if you didn't mind, about animals and how animals and their souls work? I would like to hear more about that.
Well, Janice, do you have any research on animals? I mean, I would say that out of the amount of people that I've interviewed, at least 100, I've had at least, I don't know, 20, 30%, maybe even more, that have identified something outside of human or angels or relatives there.
Yes, and the oneness. The absolute oneness that comes in which when animals die and humans die, or we all, or what you would consider, is all one. And your research is fantastic. I listen to every single word that you're saying. Also, of course, with battlefields, and also with he had his neck broken and came back with that, and all the different research that you've done. Very fascinating. It's excellent.
Oh,
very excellent.
Thank you.
But
well,
also,
About animals, I have not done research on that, but I have just observed the same thing that Rudy has, that a good number of near-death experiencers see animals in their NDEs. Sometimes they're pets, sometimes they're just animals. I remember one man who saw a horse and could communicate telepathically with the horse, and in his near-death experience. So people definitely have those experiences.
I think it would be something you want to research a little bit more, because I think there's a huge awareness that people would enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure you're right.
Can I give you one experience that happened to me with my grandfather? Would that be okay to share on your radio show?
Sure, go
would
ahead.
Would that be okay, Janice?
Yes,
yeah, well,
please do.
Oh, gosh, well, thank you so much. I appreciate that. My grandfather was, I mean, gosh, multi-millionaire, made all kinds of lost monies, raised money. I mean, he was very, very one of those ups and downs that would be born in 1901, before even the horse and the carriage and the car, and that on his deathbed at 90, it would be, all these wonderful experiences. It's fascinating that when he, the last person that he saw, he rose up because he couldn't move. He couldn't raise himself up. He said, "Sandy, Sandy, Sandy," and that was his childhood dog. It was his dog when he was 8, 9, 10, 12 years old, and that's the last person he saw. Stella woke up into bed and then whew, died. Mm-hmm. It's quite interesting that how animals come to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and
that was about 30 years ago.
Yeah. In deathbed visions, people do see deceased loved ones, whether human or animal. It seems like whatever kind of figure can be helpful in helping the person make the transition from life to death. And so if he had really warm, trusting feelings with his dog, that was the perfect entity to help him in the transition.
I believe that completely. And that it'll be with horses and with other animals and other different people that I've known. Of course, you know, I know Rudy quite well, quite well. And so, therefore, if you want to merge into this a little bit more, I think you're going to have a huge audience added to what you're doing.
Great. Thank you.
I highly suggest you move into that audience. I highly suggest you have the audience and what you want to do, what you want to create, and how you want to build your awareness, you will have so much more to talk about and research.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's very true. I have a long, long list of topics that I would like to research, and all I need is time and, like, three more lifetimes. And money.
Oh, of course. And money.
Yeah.
Money is good. Money is very, very good.
It helps.
It helps tremendously. Well, perhaps we'll stay in touch. I like you.
Good.
I like you very much. And perhaps we can stay in touch and we can organize and help each other.
That sounds great, Jessica. Good to meet you.
Yes. Okay.
Jessica,
well,
is a wonderful, wonderful person. She has so many awesome perceptions that she has from her experiences, and her into lots of interesting new directions. And I think this animal research will be, if there's a doctoral student out there who is listening to the show live on crsradio.com, also the NDE show. We come on every Monday night from 7 to 9 p.m., and we can go to a station identification break, and we can hear from our sponsors. But then, we'll go. Go
I'll
ahead.
Sit back and I'll listen. I'm going to listen. Go ahead.
Thank you so much, Jessica, for calling in. So, now, Janice Holden, now you have, I have a note on here of something I do not know a lot about. That's the Institute for Neuroscience Consciousness Studies. Now, tell me a little bit about that.
Actually, I don't know a lot about that organization. They're the ones that are hosting me tomorrow night in Austin. And so I think it used to be a group affiliated with the Institute of Noetic Sciences, and then that group sort of dissolved, but some of the people started this new organization. And so I really don't know a lot more about it, except anyone who's interested would be able to do a search on the Internet and find their website and learn more about them. Are you still there?
Me? Jessica?
Hi, Jessica. Well, I don't know what happened to Rudy.
I don't know what happened to Rudy either. I'm still listening. Okay, I'm here. I'm listening. Yes, but oh, yes, I'm listening very
you
much.
Have
so,
deep,
I know about
burning questions.
Website.
Does God exist? Is there heaven or hell? Why do we suffer? Do you feel a yearning to know there is something more? Author Mary Dioma had a transcendent experience, and she tackles all this and more in her book, Loved, A Transcendent Journey. Available in print and for download on Amazon.com. And if you buy the print version, the download is only 99 cents. For more information, go to lovedatranscendentjourney.com.
Well, I guess I'm unmuted now. Now, thank you very much, our sponsor for the show tonight, Mary Dioma, with Loved, A Transcendent Journey. She's also a person who built our webpage. And if you are interested in receiving our webpage, you can go and look for crsradio.com and locate the NDE show. Now, we have an archive that is absolutely wonderful of two-hour or three-hour shows that we have done over the last 4 years. So we want to encourage our listeners who are interested in this show to send it out to their Facebook friends, put it out on Twitter, because we have a fantastic archive that you can find. If you want to get our newsletter, you can also write to me at rudenski@yahoo.com, rudenski@yahoo.com, and I will get you on our mailing list. Our mailing list is just growing and growing and growing because this topic is something that it's really changed the way that people perceive spiritualities and soul, and I believe that NDEs are a defining difference in the way that people perceive the afterlife. I mean, would that be your, would you believe that, Janice?
Well, I do. I think for many people, these experiences are either confirming of their what they already believe, that the soul or spirit or consciousness, whatever you want to call it, survives physical death. And for some people, it who didn't believe after they read account after account, they move in the direction of believing in the survival of consciousness. Now, I have to hasten to say that from a purely scientific perspective, we can't say that near-death experiences prove the survival of consciousness after death. And the reason is that everybody who has ever reported a near-death experience didn't stay dead. And we don't know... and we don't know what happens after the person is beyond the point of being, you know, that they could be resuscitated. So from a purely scientific perspective, we can't say that NDEs prove the survival of consciousness after death, but we certainly can say that they point in that direction. And one of the things I like to say is that NDEs narrow the gap in the leap of faith that consciousness survives death.
Well, now I want to just throw in something here, and it may prove on some level, but, or maybe there's a way to say, well, maybe that's not, doesn't prove it. But for myself, anyway, I felt, well, I didn't feel like, there was a thought in my head that whenever I was returning, I was in whatever the light, and I was walking down this road, and I had the clear thought, and this is what I thought, this is important. I didn't actually think this was important, but I thought it anyway. I didn't say it out loud, in other words. But I thought, I've done this many times before.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? I've done this many times before, and then I slipped back into my body. But there are many people who would call that reincarnation. I, on the other hand, I don't believe it's reincarnation exactly, because all lives are simultaneous. I mean, that's what I believe. But it does prove to me that if there's someone can say, well, I was in a body from 200 years ago, and I lived this certain kind of life, and I was there. And then you go and do the research, and you find John Smith, who lives in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and you've never been to Albuquerque, New Mexico, and then that he did these certain things. I mean, that proves that? I mean, it's wrong here? Or what is that does not prove? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I certainly think that if there were a case like that, it would be very evidential. And I don't know of any case like that coming out of a near-death experience, but certainly there has been research into past lives. Jim Tucker at the University of Virginia prior to him, Ian Stevenson at the University of Virginia have researched past lives and have, I wouldn't say that they have concluded that that there is such a thing as reincarnation, but more that they have cases where nothing else seems to explain what they have in the case except the reincarnation, what they call the reincarnation hypothesis. So I actually think that the survival of consciousness after death, there is and I'm using now a phrase that NDE researcher Pim Van Lommel used in one of his recent books about a convergence of evidence from things like near-death experiences, after-death communication, deathbed visions, and reincarnation research, that if you look at all of those together, they point more powerfully toward the survival of consciousness after death than NDEs alone have been able to, at least so far.
Well, Janice, I want to say that after the 100 or so people I've interviewed, I would say there's a very large portion of those, I'm not saying 50%, but a good portion of those said that they now remember past lives. And,
uh-huh.
I would like to think that should be an extra question asked on a questionnaire from a near-death experiencer. Did you experience or do you now recall past lives since having had a near-death experience? And you talked about a little bit about it. You said that there was enhanced telepathy, precognition. I mean, that we see things that, you know, like talking to dead people. There are some people who actually see dead people after they have a near-death experience. But this understanding that there are many people who've had NDEs who also now understand that they lived in past lives, and they can actually do a little bit of identifying it. But oftentimes it's just a little sniff, so it's not like their whole life. But they remember
right.
a little from another life. So that's what makes me think that it isn't a bona fide, real incarnation, because they don't remember the whole life. They just remember this part that maybe this little piece. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And that's something that research has confirmed, that a substantial minority of people, either in their NDE or afterwards, have perceptions of previous lives and become more open to the idea of reincarnation, which isn't a predominant kind of idea in our U.S. culture. But after an NDE, people are much more open to the possibility of reincarnation or something like it. As you alluded to, you know, reincarnation assumes linear time, and another thing that near-death experiencers often come back with is the awareness that our perception of linear time is really illusory, and actually everything is happening all at once, but we have this illusion that it happens in this sequential form. so, but in any case, the idea of a consciousness being associated with more than one body.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. Well, I don't want to just keep switching topics, but you're so interesting and you're so knowledgeable. I have burning questions. Is it okay?
Sure. Go right ahead.
I'm sorry. I'm not knowledgeable as you about near-death experiences ever again, and I just ask, okay, because I throw out the thought regularly that people who have NDEs were going in the wrong direction. Something traumatic was going on in their life, or they had dysfunctional families, or there was some kind of dysfunction in their life that was pretty catastrophic, or they were headed, like for me, into just being a total psychopath, bent on destroying, killing people not like myself, with my cultural beliefs. But that oftentimes, mostly people who I interview say that they were going in the wrong direction, and that the NDE redirected them. Is there any studies? And I say there are studies out there, but I've it's like hearsay to me. But are there studies that would say that those who have NDEs may have them for a reason? Would you go ahead and tell me what you think?
Well, I know that Ken Ring, who is one of the leading researchers of NDEs, he's retired now, but he, during the time he was active, he was really one of the top three researchers. He had concluded at one point that most near-death experiencers Let me start back. He found that people who believed in life after death, had a sense of purpose in life and so forth, were somewhat less likely to have a near-death experience during a close brush with death than people who didn't have those beliefs, didn't have that sense of purpose. So he did conclude that it seemed like people who, quote-unquote, needed the experience were somewhat more likely to have it. But I wouldn't say that everybody was. But I do think that this would be another great study to ask people, prior to your NDE, would you say more that your life was going in the right direction, in the wrong direction, or like neither, or I don't know? And see how many people would say that they were going in the wrong direction and that the NDE served as a course correction for them to lead a more psycho-spiritually aligned life. It would be a great study.
Well, I always say that NDEs were product recalls. We have the NDE because we weren't aligned with our purpose. And lots and lots of NDEers come back and say, now I have a purpose. I know that being the chief financial officer of this multi-million-dollar organization, or being this marketing specialist, was not enough. That wasn't what I was supposed to do. And now I need to do something completely different that's more in alignment with helping others. That's a strong component to me from the NDE experiences I've interviewed. Is that they now want to help others.
Yes, and the research that I've seen supports that absolutely. People become more concerned about others and likely to move into careers of service to others. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, I'm glad that the research is. I mean, I've been saying this for 4 years, so. I may have heard it somewhere, but it's good to have you, Janice, to, you know, somebody who's researched or at least edited the research for 3,500 experiencers, and come back and say that this is the research. I want to go on to, and I hate to go there, talk about the negative aspects of NDEs and negative NDEs, but I think that it's important to look at the other side of the NDE, the dark side, if you want to call it, where people who come back from NDEs are likely to lose their primary relationship with their loved one. I mean, especially the spouse is the one or a girlfriend, boyfriend, and that was a significant person in their life. And
yeah.
But there is probably research to say that. I mean, because I think when people perceive love in one way and then they see love in a different way, and I may be wrong, but I believe that most people, I mean, I would say probably 90% of people who have near-death experiences experience love in a completely different level and way than they do with their intimate relationships. Is that true?
Yes. Well, actually, now you've brought up two different topics. So one of them is distressing near-death experiences themselves, and then the other is the after-effect of, like, a higher rate of divorce among near-death experiencers, no matter what kind of NDE they had. So let me take that last one first about the higher rate of divorce. One of my doctoral students, Roseanne Christian, did her dissertation on the incidence of divorce following a near-death experience. So what she did is she took people who'd had NDEs, and then she took another group of people who had not had an NDE, but reflected back on their most traumatic experience in their lives from the time that they were married. And so she had people who had been married during their NDEs, and then people who had not had an NDE but reflected back on their married life to the time of their most traumatic experience. And she, because NDEs do tend to be traumatic in the sense that they transform the person and kind of pull the rug out from under the person's belief system, so they can be, you know, very traumatic to adjust to afterwards. And so what she found was that the people who'd had the NDEs were definitely reported higher incidence than people who'd had any other kind of traumatic experience during their married life. And what she found was that she was using the research of John Gottman, who has found that when people have similar dreams and values in life, it helps them stay together in a happy marriage. And when their dreams and purposes diverge, they tend to divorce. And what happened with near-death experiencers is that because their values changed so much, they were really a different person than they had been prior to their NDE. And so their values and goals in life diverged from what they had been, and it made the marriage no longer viable for them. And one of the things that was interesting is that many of these NDEers, when they divorced, they didn't have a lot of acrimony toward their spouse. In fact, several of them said that they really wanted to see their spouse remarried and happy with somebody who fit for them. And another thing that came out of her research was there were a few cases where after the NDE, the people said that their marriage was stronger than ever. And what she found in those cases is that prior to the NDE, the spouse had more NDE-like values. So when the other spouse had the NDE, it actually brought them into closer alignment with the values and goals of their spouse, and in those cases, the marriage was stronger than ever. So if the people's values converge, then the marriage continues. And if the NDE causes the people's values to diverge, then they divorce. So that's
That you say that, NDE-like values. And this is the other thing that I say. If you have an NDE and you are not transformed in any way, I don't think you had an NDE. I think you just had a bad dream or you had a bad day. If you come back absolutely unchanged and no values changes, I don't know if that's an NDE. To me, I think that a spiritually transformative experience almost always occurs when an NDE happens, and so their values change. And what the definition of a values changing is learning. And to define learning means that you have to have a noticeable change. That's learning.
Well, what I can say is what the convergence of research indicates, that the deeper the NDE, the more change the person exhibits. And so if the person just, popped out of their body for 3 seconds and then popped back in, they're not likely to change as much as if they have, they left their body and saw entities and deceased loved ones and went into the light and had a life review. The more features the person experienced, the more they're going to be transformed.
Well, that is very, very close to what I my understanding is as well. I mean, you hear people say they had an accident and a light came right to their face and then they jumped back in their body. And so that person doesn't have a lot to talk about. They don't say, well, now I'm changed from being a sniper to working the child care. That's never going to happen,
But
we have a caller. Caller, I know you've been on the line for a long time now, but if you want to talk or you have a question for our guest, Janice Holden, or you have a comment, if you're still on the line, go ahead. Well, it looks like they may just have gone back to listening. But caller, if you do want to talk to Janice, just press 1 and then press 1 again, and that way we'll know that you're ready to talk, okay? All right. Now, did we have a caller? No. Okay. I know we do have one. Janice,
well,
is that you?
If you notice that someone comes up, feel free to interrupt me so that they don't have to feel frustrated that they can't get through.
Well, I'll be honest with you. What you're talking about tonight is so interesting. It's so on time. It's just exactly the kinds of things that I allude to in my interviews. I allude to them, but you're saying research that backs it up.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoy that.
Really, what you're doing is a form of research. You're talking to numbers of people and seeing themes and repeated patterns and that sort of thing. And that's what research is about. The only difference is that I'm drawing on several studies and you're drawing on interviews with 100 people. 100 is still a good. That's a good number in science. So you're doing research too.
Well, if
if anyone wants to look at our research, we've been doing this show for 4 years. We've interviewed some amazing near-death experiencers. I mean, and we've had researchers. So if you want to find us, go to crsradio.com and just type in NDE Rudensky, R-U-D-E-N-S-K-I, and you will find a lot of research. I mean, if you want to call our radio show research, I mean, we have just had such the most amazing experience in the show, just incredible, incredible experiences. And you can find us on Facebook, on Twitter, on the Internet, through Caribbean Radio Show, CRS Radio. I want to encourage any experiencers or researchers out there who would like to be on the show to write me, Rudensky, R-U-D-E-N-S-K-I, at yahoo.com, and say, Rudensky, Rudy Rudensky, that's who I am. Say, I would love to talk about my near-death experience. Or there are some people who have near-death-like experiences. In other words, the connection is that they were transformed, okay? They have NDE-like experience through meditation, through something. And then at the end of it, they have a value change. I would much rather that our listeners would have a near-death-like experience and then become spiritually transformed than having to break your neck 3 times like myself, or to have your partially decapitated, disconnected from your skull, from your body, or from drowning in a pool and them finding you, or dying with a heart attack. I mean, or getting hit truck. I mean, I've had so many people. There's a better way to experience what we experienced through dying or being very near death than dying. We don't want you committing suicide. That's usually a negative experience, and we're going to talk about that in a minute. But I want to discourage you from killing yourself to have a near-death experience, because I believe that those who have negative NDEs, well, they would wish they had not have, but I mean, they had not killed themselves or done that, but they also can also gain some information. So we'd rather you not kill yourself and not be in a car wreck or have a heart attack.
Well, you know, I guess there are really two things that I want to follow up from what you're saying. One is, first, maybe we can talk a little bit about distressing near-death experiences. And the reason that we, in the professional literature, don't call them negative is because even though the experience is distressing or painful in some ways, usually, eventually, people who've had distressing NDEs show the same positive after effects as people who've had pleasurable NDEs. So how can we call these experiences negative if they have such positive outcomes? So what we do in the professional literature is talk about how, as far as we can tell, at least from research, about 90% of reported experiences have been pleasurable, dominated by feelings like peace, joy, and love. And about 10% of reported experiences have been dominated by distressing feelings like terror, horror, confusion, those kinds of distressing emotions. And there seem to be 3 kinds of distressing near-death experiences. The most common kind has all the same features as the pleasurable experience, you know, leaving the body, seeing deceased loved ones, having a life review, going into this all-knowing, all-loving light, and having a sense of knowing everything, those sorts of things. But for some reason, in the distressing experience, the person is interpreting what they're experiencing negatively. And the content itself isn't distressing, it's the person's It's like the person's moving rapidly through a tunnel, and they don't want to be moving rapidly through a tunnel. It's like they're digging in their heels, and that's what makes the experience distressing. So that's the most common type. The next most common type of distressing experience, the experience consists entirely of the person being out in a void, absolutely alone, forever, and hyper aware of this this eternal isolation. So it's an experience of eternal isolation. It's a kind of hell, but not the kind of hell that most people think of when they think of hell. And then the least, most common type of distressing experience is an experience involving torment of some kind. But even then, it isn't the kind of torment that we hear about, hellfire and brimstone. One near-death experiencer, Matthew Davel, for what he perceived as 3 days and three nights, he encountered one after another all the people in his life that he had hurt in some way. And when he encountered them, he felt what they had felt when he had done what he had done to them. So he felt what it was to be on the receiving end of his unloving actions. And it was hell for him to experience this time after time after time. So that is the kind of quote-unquote hellish experience that people might describe in a distressing NDE.
I wanted to talk about those separately because let's go back through them, okay?
Okay.
Now, I came back from my experience believing that holding grudges, the absolute worst thing a human being could do while we're here.
Uh-huh.
Because the grudge actually puts you in the person. It binds you to the person you're holding the grudge to, and not only in the life review, but maybe even in future lives. Because if you don't work it out, you're going to work it out.
Yeah.
So I believe it's kind of like the bullies on the playground, and the kid getting picked on. They end up having to resolve it. It's kind of like, because I believe from my experience that there are better playgrounds than the one we're in right now. And we have to work out this bully and victim thing here. And if we can work it out, then we can go on to these better playgrounds. But until we get beyond the victim bully, the victim victimizer, it's a game we play. It's like a learning. If we can't get past
that keeps us entrapped at a certain level of consciousness and prevents us from moving forward.
And also I felt like that there are lesser and higher levels of heaven, and that those grudges can lower you into a one where you just go into, you're just like a lemming. You get recycled over and over and over and over and over until you figure it out. And into these lower consciousness types of things. Anyway, that's one thing. Now, I don't know what the research says about that, but I believe it from interviewing lots of people that they felt that forgiveness. And now they say forgiveness, I say holding no grudges. I believe it's the same thing. Now, what do you think the research is about? Because I know that there are a lot more negative experiences that y'all just are, because people don't report them, and lots of them, and because I thought on my show, because almost none of them want to talk about their negative experience on my show, hardly ever, even though they do have negative experiences, or parts of the experience are negative, but usually it's not all of the experience negative, but what happens a lot is drug users are the most typical negative experiencers that don't want to talk about their negative experience. So I think that
the sample might not be exactly accurate, that it might be more than 10% that have negative experiences. It's just that if you're a drug addict and you were strung out on methamphetamine and you had a hell experience or a negative experience, that you probably aren't just going to share that with everyone in the world. I mean, what do you think?
Well, you'll notice that when I talked about the percentages, I talked about the number of people who report. I'm not saying the number of people who have. We can't know if they don't report. You know, from a scientific perspective, we just can't know how many people actually have the experience. But I've known people who didn't want to talk even about their pleasurable NDE for one reason or another. And so I think there's some of those out there too, but I suspect that you're right, that there may be more people who had distressing experiences who don't want to talk about them. But, you know, from a scientific perspective, I can't say for sure. I can only guess.
Okay, so that leads probably to the next one, and that's the void. And to me, this is the most terrifying one that's going to be not reported, okay, the least likely to be reported, in my opinion, because this person, and he said, and I have personally talked to several people who said, well, I don't want to talk, but I don't believe in NDEs because I left my body and I just went to nowhere, and I didn't exist. I was aware, but I just was nowhere. And I don't want to die. I'm afraid of dying because I experienced this horrible, awful nothingness. Now, to me, that is a real, real rare, and it's usually not the person you would think. You know, the person you think that's going to have that experience is going to be, you know, convicted murderer, you know, rapist murderer. But sometimes it's just regular people that have that experience. So,
right. Just to confirm what you're saying, that one thing that research has revealed is that there's at least we haven't been able to find any relationship between the quality of a person's life and the kind of near-death experience they had. In other words, it isn't bad people who have bad experiences. There's no relationship with people who we can't find anything, you know, really bad in their history, but they have distressing experiences. And conversely, we've had some pretty nasty people who had pleasurable experiences. So we don't know. This is one of the things I like to say. Heaven only knows why some people have pleasurable experiences, why some have distressing experiences. I hope that there's a higher wisdom at work. We can't figure out from science what it might be.
Well, from my personal perspective, I believe I had a positive experience. In fact, I didn't have any negative life review. Well, my life review edited, and I only saw I saw the negative stuff happening, but the editor would like zip past the negative parts of the experience and go straight to the affection, straight
so
to
how,
the
kindness. How do you interpret that? What do you make of that?
Well, I believe that I was being shown a good example of what love is and what affection is.
Uh-huh.
What mercy is, what is, what joy is, and that given a positive example, instead of punching me and browbeating me for being a bad boy, for hating all kinds of people that it was just ridiculous that I hated because of my religious upbringing and my cultural mythologies, you know, that communists were evil and that homosexual people were evil and that people who didn't believe what I believe, Catholics were evil. I mean, I had this litany of people that really limited what God loved into, I don't know, this, you know, maybe a couple of million people. and then, but having seen love the way it's supposed to be, what love is. It's kindness, affection, mercy, compassion. It's love. It's joy. I mean, I say the word love, but I mean it by loving kindness. And so I believe I was shown a better example of love than the one that I had, which was, I love you if you do what I tell you. If you do what I tell you, then I love you. If you don't do what I tell you, you're going to get spanked, you know, which was my cultural belief.
Yeah. Yeah. But, well, you know, another topic that you touched on is suicide. And one of the things that research indicates is that people who attempt suicide are not very much more likely to have distressing experiences than people who die from natural causes. However, I hardly want to breathe before I go on and say however. People who have had NDEs as a result of suicide virtually never attempt suicide again. And the reason is that in their NDE, it's not that they had a distressing experience. It's that they learned experientially that their life and every life has meaning and value and purpose, and to end it prematurely is like throwing a gift back at the person who gave it to you. And so they realize that when we have terrible challenges in life, it is those challenges are there as an opportunity for us to learn to deepen our capacity for love and compassion and forgiveness, and that we're meant to work through those, to move through those challenging times rather than try to avoid them through death. And so the answer, in my view, it's just like you said a minute ago, rather than the light trying to beat you over the head with all the things that you'd done wrong, it showed you all the positive ways that love can manifest. In suicide NDEs, rather than giving people a distressing experience, they are given the knowledge, not the belief, not the faith, but the knowledge that their life is important and it has purpose, and that difficulties in life are to be lived through so that we can learn the psychospiritual lessons that those difficulties have to teach us. There was a great study that was done some years ago of people who survived jumping off the Golden Gate Bridge. And what the researchers found to a person was that the person said, the minute my feet left the bridge, I knew that I had made a terrible mistake. And that the problem that I was trying to escape by killing myself was something that I could live through. And so these are all people who survived. They didn't try to kill themselves again, no matter what kind of difficulties they ran into in life. So I think that people who are contemplating suicide can take something hopeful from the story of people who have survived suicide attempts, and especially those with near-death experiences, that these people just don't attempt suicide again because they know that life has purpose.
You know, I absolutely agree with that statement. I absolutely have, and I have interviewed several people who had a near-death experience while committing suicide, and to a number, they said that they no longer want to commit suicide. However, now you said you don't like that word, however. What I'm going to say is there is a however. I believe that some DE experiencers have the experience, suffer real trauma when getting into a society by their loved ones and by their boss or by whomever. And many of them, I do believe, do commit suicide. So I don't think all NDEs come back not suicidal. But I believe the suicide, the ones that survive the suicide, that's a different story. They do not do it again. However,
yeah.
I believe that there is depression related to NDEs. And I mean, I'm not certain about that. I don't know what the research says, but I think that when you go, when you come back to your loved one and your loved one or your grandmother or somebody says that you just saw the devil into the skies as God, or that was just a hallucination, or buck up, private, get back in there and go kill the commies for mommy. I mean, those things can cause serious stress in relationships and also in. I think they can lead to depression. I mean, I'm not certain of that. Well, I don't know what the studies say or research says, but
well,
what
as,
would you say?
As a matter of fact, my doctoral student and I just completed a study of near-death experiencers' experiences of disclosing their NDEs to others. And what we found was that they said that when the other person discounted what they had experienced or diagnosed them as crazy or demonized them or the experience, denied the possibility that the experience was at least real to the person who experienced it, those were distressing experiences in and of themselves. Definitely, I completely agree with you that the way other people respond to disclosure of a near-death experience is very critical to the near-death experiencer's well-being. And people need to know that it's important to acknowledge that the experience was real to the experiencer and let go of assumptions that these experiences are somehow make the person crazy. They don't. The research is absolutely clear that there is no relationship between near-death experiences and mental illness. Now, that's not to say that people with mental illness don't have NDEs. They do, but they have them in the same proportion as people without mental illness. So there's just no relationship between mental illness and NDEs. And in terms of demonizing the experience, many years ago I had an experience myself where I asked a minister what he thought about someone who had said that a near-death experience was of the devil. And this minister said, he said, first of all, I'm not a big, you know, Bible-thumping person, but he said, I really believe the Bible gives us a litmus test for what is and is not of the devil. And it's in Galatians, and it says that the fruits of the Spirit are love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Against such there is no law. Well, what are the fruits of near-death experiences? Love, joy, peace. You know, we can go through the whole same thing. So these are not experiences of the devil. Now, it doesn't mean that people don't sometimes, their lives are disrupted sometimes because of the NDE, because it exposes them to a worldview that is very different from what they had before the NDE. But eventually, if they're able to integrate the experience, they become more loving and more peaceful, more faithful, and so forth. So we need to learn how to respond in helpful ways to people who've had these experiences.
Janice, I mean, we're running. I mean, this just went by so fast. I mean, I've been waiting on somebody to talk to about these things for a long time, and
that was knowledgeable, and you've just answered so many questions. And I just want to see if, I mean, you, well, we have a question. Were there any surprises? And I think you mentioned some of those surprises. I was very surprised to hear that the negative experiencers were without, almost to a number, they were, for those jumping off the bridge, that they said they would never commit suicide. But also I like the way you talked about how each and every one of us is valuable. Even you out there, the listener, who had a negative experience and you've been afraid to talk about it, if you want to, I'd love for you to call in on the show, 661-467-2407. You just have a couple of minutes to take calls. Press 1 on your dial. Now, Dennis, if someone wanted to if someone wanted to hear more information about what you know, is there a way that they could locate that?
Well, yes. My email address is jan.holden@unt.edu. And anybody who wants to is welcome to email me. And you had asked about where I'm going to be speaking tomorrow night, June 17th, 2014, at the Austin Center for Spiritual Living. It's at 5555 North Lamar Boulevard, Suite D, like in dog, 115. So that's where I'll be speaking from 7 to 9 tomorrow evening.
And if you're not from Austin, if you're going down I-35 and you turn right if you're coming from Dallas, if you turn left if you're coming from San Antonio, then you just go over about a mile, and that's North Lamar. Hey, you'll find it. 5555 North Lamar Boulevard, and the location is the
Austin Center for Spiritual Living.
I love it. Isn't it just a beautiful name for your venue? Thank
it
you
is.
So much for coming. And I want to give you just a few minutes, okay, to kind of like the elevator speech about what you do and why it's important to you. I mean, you have just answered so many questions. Yeah, I think that a lot of it can be found in the Handbook of Near-Death Experiences, but I really hope that people will go out and listen to your interview. Are y'all going to put it out there on the web at some point, or is this just going to be for the presentation?
Yeah, actually, two things. The lecture actually is already on the web. So if anyone Googles my name, Janice Holden, and near-death experiences, the website will come up that already contains. It's about 2 hours of presentation in three or four parts. And also they're going to tape my presentation tomorrow night and probably put it on the web again. So anybody who really wants it should be able to find it. Yeah. And for my elevator speech, are we ready for my elevator speech?
Go ahead, Janet.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you asked that, Rudy, because I've been wanting to say that, I talked before about researching veridical perception and how people perceive things during their NDEs that are later verified to be accurate, but there wasn't any way they could physically have known this, and yet it's shown to be true. The whole reason that I'm interested in verifying the accuracy of near-death experiences is because of really what I perceive to be the message of near-death experiences, and it's something that you really already said. We're living, what NDEers tend to say is that we're here on Earth to advance in our capacity to love and to acquire knowledge. And people will believe that message if they believe that NDEs are real. And so that's really my purpose in even researching veridical perception. and researching how people respond when people disclose NDEs. I'm trying to help humanity move to the place where they can get the message, the really important message from near-death experiences, and apply it in the way that we relate to each other, both in personal relationships and in through our institutions, our governments, and things like that. So that's my driving purpose.
You know, and it's the driving purpose of this radio show. To me, the show is therapy for myself. It really is. Because I was one of those ostracized for my near-death experience. I would just tell people, I talked to God, and God loved me, and God not only loved me, but loved everyone. Mm-hmm. And I would get that you really didn't meet God. You met. And then others would say that, what you heard was a lie, because God only loves Christians.
Mm-hmm.
And that everyone else is going to hell. And and then others would say, God only loves Muslims, or Allah only loves Muslims. Mm-hmm. And so I would get death threats whenever I first started talking about NDEs 11 years ago, 12 years ago. But I think that the tide has turned. No death threats for years now. I think that the research is starting to show that across all cultures, people have NDEs, and that there is an overwhelming sense of an afterlife amongst people from all cultures.
Yeah, I agree. Afterlife and a purpose in human life, why we're all here. Yep. I agree completely.
And I think, you know, we don't get a lot of non-Western NDEs. We have had several out of the 100, six, seven, eight of them, and I may even have a few more out there. However, I think the non-Western NDEs are some of the most interesting and fantastical ones because of they don't generally follow the rules of the Western NDE. I mean, I know we're running out of time, but hope you'll come back. We're just a run out of time. Thank you so much for coming on, Janice.
Oh, my pleasure, and thank you, Rudy, for what you're doing.
Well, Dr. Richardson, I really appreciate you having us on your show every Monday night.
Please take a call. Okay,
go ahead, caller. Go ahead.
Yeah, is this this is Linda Truax.
Hi, Linda.
Hey.
Hey, listen, I know we're short on time, so I was just going to say that issue on suicide, when you take someone who is suicidal and introduce them to the lessons from the experiencer, it can save their life.
Yeah.
And I'm a testament.
That's really wonderful to hear, Linda, and that's another study that I would love to be able to do, to introduce people who are feeling suicidal to NDE information and see if it helps them as much or more than antidepressants.
Yes, if we could get the VA to listen to this, it would be a big step forward.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, thank you for your time.
Thanks, Linda.
Thank you. Thank you, Linda. Thank you, callers who I didn't get to. I apologize so much for missing out on those callers that were waiting. I know that you love this show. Send it on to your friends, your family, to maybe soldiers who are out there, those who are suicidal. Send it out to everyone, okay? Because this is really the grade A information and research about near-death experiences. I hope you will. And thank you, Dr. Richardson. Thank you, Dottie Clark, the creator of our show. And thank you, Journey Home, out there in the chat room. Thank you so much, our sponsor for tonight, Mary Dioma. And I hope that you will follow our show every Monday night from 7 to 9 p.m. But more importantly, it's what Janice said, that those values of love, kindness, of self-control, compassion. I mean, the litany of things, I believe that's what you will find the NDE experiences will. They don't always live it. I'll tell you the truth. I don't live it every day. But I think I'm a whole lot better than the psychopath I was before I died. Okay? How about that?
You have deep burning questions. Does God exist? Is there heaven or hell? Why do we suffer? Do you feel a yearning to know there is something more? Author Mary Dioma had a transcendent experience, and she tackles all this and more in her book, Loved, A Transcendent Journey, available in print and for download on Amazon.com. And if you buy the print version, the download is only 99 cents. For more information, go to LovedATranscendentJourney.com.